Welcome back. Yeah, man, how you doing? You good?
I know you like that.
Yeah, I'm good, man. I'm good.
I know you like that.
How long you been back, man?
Welcome into the Saturday show, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Saturday morning. My name is Jay Catch, joined as always by Michelle Bodkin. Michelle, how are you?
I'm doing really well. How are you?
Well, I'm not doing too bad. It's crazy to think that 2024 is like here, Michelle. It seems like 2023 flew by, but it seems to happen every single year kind of in the industry that we're in, right?
Oh, completely and totally true. Especially when I think you have a year of chaos, like
sure,
it felt like
too.
2023 was.
Yeah, no doubt about that, because there's a bunch of things, a bunch of upheaval, it feels like, in the world of sports. We'll get to it. The whole idea of today's show for Michelle and I is we're kind of go back through the top stories of what happened during 2023 for the local sports, I guess, teams, programs, Utah, BYU, the Jazz. We'll even get to some Utah State, some RSL. So we'll have a lot of fun. But, Michelle, let's start the show, and obviously let's get everybody's highlight of the week. So I'm going to have you fire off first.
Yeah, so I've been off all week, so if you
yes,
all
you
are
have.
Wondering why I've been so quiet and have not, like, said anything online or really, like, written anything, it's because I've taken time off. I'm actually technically off today, too, but felt like doing the radio, so we're doing radio. It's been mm-hmm. nice, though, to just not really do anything or worry about anything. I've watched all the games. I watched the run in Utes last night, but didn't have to do anything with it. So it's sometimes nice to just take a step back and just enjoy things for what they are.
Hey, that's actually a very good thing. How was your Christmas overall as well?
It was good. It was very, very low key. I was kind of in zombie mode because I had just got, I mean, more or less, I had just gone back from Las Vegas covering the Vegas Bowl, and myself and Andrea Urban decided to hit the town and try and have the Las Vegas experience after the bowl game wrapped up. And then I did not go to sleep at all that night because it was just kind of a, we'll just stay out, do the Vegas things, and then I will grab my suitcase and head to the airport. So...
Okay.
So well, I was kind of recovering from that. I'm too old to do that.
Okay.
But I'll probably be convinced to do it again at some point in my life because, you know.
Hey, you got to do it sometimes, right?
That's sometimes, yes.
Yeah, no doubt. Highlight of my week just really was Christmas, hanging out with my kids and my extended family, I guess I should say. And a lot of my wife's in-laws were in town, so just kind of mentioning like kind of low-key, Michelle. But, yeah, it was just nice to kind of kick back, not have to really worry about anything, and just kind of enjoy the holiday.
Yeah, that's really kind of the key, right, is to just kind of get that quality time in and just – enjoy a day. And sometimes that's really hard to do in this industry because it just never shuts off. But thankfully everybody was kind of nice to us and allowed us to have, you know, a nice Christmas. So
sure, no doubt. Christian, what do you got for this week?
Christmas, you know, first Christmas with my wife as a married couple, so that was fun. I went over to her in-law or her parents' house, my in-laws, they live in Las Vegas, so traveled over there, got in late Saturday night after the Utah State bowl game, and then spent, you know, Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, and then another day, flew back, but that was pretty fun, yeah, got to watch all her little nieces and nephews open presents, and got some fun gifts of our own, so them living in Vegas, it's kind of tough to see them, so, you know, I always like to go see them when I can.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I totally understand that. And it is. It's, I mean, thankfully my family all lives here, mostly in Utah. But I have some family scattered elsewhere, including Las Vegas. And so, yeah, it's always nice to get time in with people that aren't maybe as easily accessible.
Yeah, and I didn't do the whole, you know, downtown Vegas thing.
You're smart.
Well, it's funny. Like, all the people that live there, they hate it. They
yeah.
can't stand downtown Vegas. So when I go to my in-laws' house, we never go downtown, do any of that stuff. But Yeah.
Same. Same with my relatives that live down there. They're like, the Strip? Yeah, right.
Yeah, don't go there, right?
Absolutely. So, I mean, I guess we should kind of get into the meat and potatoes of what we're doing today. Let's get into what's the big deal.
Do you know who I am?
No, I can't say that I do.
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal. I'm very important. I have
Christian, you got
many
me.
Leather-bound books, and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
All right, time for not technical fouls. Wow, that was a big faux pas.
We'll was it technical foul?
It was a technical foul on me right there for starting off the show in the wrong way. But what's the big deal? Now, Michelle, we're going to talk kind of about like the different big stories going on and all the different big teams for the year in review. But before we get to that, I wanted to – you mentioned the fact you've been watching the most of the games. You watched the Running Utes last night. You've been watching college football. Mm-hmm. Before we look back at all of it, I kind of want to get your feel for last week because we did a Saturday show, but it was before the bowl games really kicked off. So let's start off on the Utah front. Let's be honest, that was a rather boring bowl game between Northwestern and Utah. Give me your overall sense of how things went for Utah in that game.
You know, in a lot of ways, it did not surprise me that it went the way that it did. Okay. We knew that a lot of people were going to be missing, I think, especially on the offensive side of the ball.
Sure.
And it just seemed like probably they would lack some firepower, and that indeed proved to be true. I think, you know, you also had some, if we're being honest, I don't think anybody meant to be a distraction, but I mean, you have the distraction of Bryson Barnes is, you know, here, but he's kind of looking toward the future. You know, you have at that time, it was just kind of the rumors and the rumblings of what's happening with Jaquindon Jackson. And what's he going to choose to do? And I'm trying to remember who else. But, you know, so, I mean, you have some of that kind of stuff going on, too. But I think overall we got a good look at some of the young kids, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. And the defense was also missing quite a few key players. And I thought those young guys stepped up and did a really, really good job. Anytime you get a fourth down goal line stand, you're doing something right. Yeah. So I thought that was pretty impressive. Again, the offense was what it was. And to be honest, I don't think anyone should have been really terribly shocked or disappointed by that. And I hope, and I see people make comments about, oh my God, if this is what this looks like next year, it's not going to look like that next year.
No.
Provided that we don't see the injuries that we saw this past year, which I don't expect. I think, you know, they paid their price to the health gods, and mm-hmm. they should be good to go for another couple of years before something like that hopefully happens. But you know, this team will ultimately end up being just fine. Like, I'm not worried about it. You can't really take a whole lot from this season and apply it to next season. This season was one of one.
Sure.
And I just don't think it's really going to apply or hold a lot of precedence for what happens next year when Utah moves to the Big 12.
Now, the whole thing with Jaquindon Jackson, you're right, it was kind of percolating out there in the ether, as it were, and we were all kind of like, okay, what's actually happening here? And then he does announce he didn't announce it until afterwards, but the word came out that he had entered the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. Do you have any intel on why? Because this is a guy who's a starting running back for Utah. It seems strange, of all the people that have entered the transfer portal for Utah, him seems to be kind of the one that's like, what in the world is going on here?
Yeah, that was one that I think really hurt, and even I felt myself doing it, like, no, like, you can't go, like,
yeah.
You know, and I think a lot of that, at least from my perspective, is I'm a storyteller. That's primarily what I do. That's my strength in this industry, and he has a phenomenal story in it. I so wanted to see that finish out with Utah. But not to be. And, you know, I think a lot of it comes down to Utah we all know, we've all heard, you and I have talked a lot off air, you know, about various players from both Utah and BYU that have gone some pretty crazy offers from, you know, bigger programs. And so, you know, so far, for the most part, Utah and BYU have been able to stave those people off. But we all knew that everybody's kind of working with borrowed time, and the time would come when an offer was maybe too good and would kind of land in the right person's lap that they would want to take that opportunity and that offer. And that's just more or less, I think, what happened with JJ. You know, he is a kid that is very, very concerned about taking care of his mom and his sister. A very family-oriented guy. And, I mean, he and his family have been through the ringer. I know that, you know, very well documented, you know, what's kind of happened with him since he's entered college especially. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they lost his dad at a pretty young age and stuff. And so I think, you know, he just feels a lot of responsibility to make sure everybody's solid and good. And he got an offer that was kind of too good to pass up. I don't know that he's ultimately going to the first place that offered, but I think it kind of awakened him to the fact that he could maybe go someplace else and make more money.
Well, let me just interject. That's the thing about this. I think that's what's turning a lot of people off to the sport, Michelle, is that, yes, offers, this is, like, they're talking about, this is college football free agency. It's what it is, folks. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the reality of what it is. I know that you're not supposed to have money being the quote-unquote inducement for guys to leave. Guess what? It's happening all over the country, and the sad part is this one caught up with Utah, and you're right. Some of the family circumstances around a guy like Jaquindon Jackson forced him to kind of look at the situation, and he's going to the highest bidder, for lack of a better term. And that's tough to stomach as a college football fan, but that's kind of the reality of what we're dealing with right now.
Absolutely. And I, you know, I've been asked about this several times this week. You know, I really don't have a problem with these guys getting paid. You know, I fully support that. And I think this is something that should have been happening forever ago. You can't use someone's personality to sell a product and then not give them a cut of that. It's just how we're doing it that really bothers me. And it bothers me that schools, collectives, whoever, whatever, are allowed to contact people that aren't even in the transfer portal and mm-hmm. make offers to tempt them to go to the transfer portal. And if I'm being very honest and very blunt, you know, that it's kind of abusive. It's abuse of power, especially when you kind of pick out guys that maybe have some vulnerabilities and dangle that carrot, but don't really make any kind of promises or, we'll just go with promises or let them know that, you know, there's other reasons that would be good for them as to why they should, you know, transfer. And so sometimes they do, sometimes they don't, right? But, like, it's kind of one of those things. I've often said, I think ultimately what we're going to need to see happen with college football, if things continue the way that they're continuing, which I hope they don't, because I just don't think it's sustainable. But if they do, you know, we're going to have to somehow come up with some kind of rookie symposium for high school kids entering college in order to know how to deal with all of this and to kind of identify people that, you know, really are looking out for their best interest versus people that, you know, just want to lure you away but have no intention of making sure that you see proper playing time or, you know, some of that, kind of get the help that you need in order to maybe continue that career if that's the career you want to, you know, continue to pursue. There's just a lot going on that needs to be addressed, needs to be worked on, and I want to make very clear, I don't know if that is, you know, fully what's going on with Jaquindon, but, like, it could be. You know, and if it's not him, there's other guys that, you know, are falling victim to this. And I think at some point we will start seeing some really kind of sad stories come out where guys jump on the money, but then it costs them down the road. And so there just needs to be some efforts made, I think, to show these guys, you know, bigger pictures. As far as, you know, when you entertain a deal like that, to just look at the whole picture and not the immediate future of taking a deal.
Sure, and I agree with you on that. The other thing about this is, and we can expand this out a little bit, you've probably watched some of these bowl games. I've watched a number of them myself because it's bowl season, and a lot of these games, I don't know if you watched last night, Michelle, but it was absolutely brutal. Ohio State, with their third-string quarterback. I saw some jokes from Utah fans, which actually made me chuckle.
Yeah.
Hey, you struggle to score when you don't have your first or second-string quarterback? Yeah, you struggle to score. But these bowl games, by and large, a lot of them have been affected by the transfer portal. Guys exiting the football program, not playing with their team in the bowl game. I actually got to give big props to guys like Bryson Barnes and Travis Broughton for actually suiting up and playing for Utah in that bowl game, even though they're in the portal, because a lot of these guys are exiting, and it's having an adverse effect on the postseason for college football in general.
Yeah, and I think that's something that needs to be fixed as well. And my solution, honestly, is why are we opening the portal as bowl season starts or as postseason play starts?
Sure.
Should we not keep that closed and open it the first day after a national champion has been crowned? And then, like, to me, I think ultimately what you do is that second signing day that used to be the big day but no longer is because everybody's signing in December, make that the transfer portal signing day. And then there's something to kind of look forward to, that kind of last push before you start gearing towards spring ball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then you don't have this mess of, well, who's entering the portal before we play whatever bowl game? Or, I mean, at some point, it might even start affecting playoffs as well. So, and especially with the playoffs expanding next year, I think bowl games are maybe going to start becoming a thing of the past. But, I mean, so then you have guys that are faced with, oh, gosh, like, do I stay and play in this playoff game, or do I enter the portal or go to the NFL? Just push everything back. It's not that big of a deal.
Well, and that's the thing about it, Michelle. I see all these people saying, well, they've got to be able to transfer and be able to get into school by the time the new term starts. Okay, folks, let's be real. This has never been a purely academic issue. Because if it was purely academics, Michelle, we wouldn't have hundreds of thousands, if not million-dollar offers going out to athletes who haven't even officially entered the transfer portal and them saying, hey, I'm gonna leave now. That if this was academics, yeah, it'd be a much different conversation. But you're right. I think it was Lane Kiffin this week that said that, why are we doing our free agency and our offseason while the season is still going? I'm with you, Michelle.
Yeah.
You gotta back it up a little bit. And yes, if you have kids if you're doing this in January, as you mentioned, kind of leading up to signing day, and then obviously you said the attention turns to spring ball. Guess what? These guys transfer. Either you talk to your school about having a way that they can maybe enroll late and do like a term type option, or you simply tell them, hey, you're going to come play for us and you're going to have to enroll when spring term or summer term begins at that point. But you're right. You cannot have both your roster changes going on while your team's also playing in the postseason. It does not work.
No, it's produced a lot of hot garbage games, being very honest. So I would like to see that changed. Again, I have no problems with guys wanting to transfer. I have no problems with guys wanting to find a better option for themselves. But let's not do that while there's still games being played.
Yeah, it just doesn't square up at all, but it's one of those crazy things out there. You excited, by the way, for the playoff this year? I think we got two pretty good games on deck.
Yeah, I'm overall excited, I guess. Maybe not excited, but curious. Mild curiosity, I suppose.
Sure.
Yeah, that's probably how I would label it. To be honest, I'm way more pumped for next year, when I feel like we're probably going to get a much more true measure of who really should be involved in that.
Sure.
With the 12-team playoff.
Yeah, well, let me interject one thing on that. So, for example, last night we had Missouri and Ohio State playing, and Ohio State
Okay, they're down. Devin Brown is supposed to play, gets an ankle injury early, isn't able to really participate, and they were down on the third-string quarterback. But on the other side, Missouri, Michelle, looked absolutely dynamite. What could they have done? Like, they're one of those teams that kind of flew under the radar all year long, and if this was a 12-team playoff, how dangerous would the Missouri Tigers have been?
Yeah, yeah. No, I think – and I think there's a lot of teams like that. I think, you know, there's been occasions in the – in recent memory where Utah could have been that team, and how exciting would that have been, you know, in this community to have that kind of thing going on. But because they didn't rank as high as some others, or they're not the sexy name brand, they kind of got overlooked for that. And again, there's countless teams. You mentioned, you know, Missouri as being one of those teams. You know, and maybe we look at FSU even, you know, it's, you know, like, let these teams either prove that they do or don't belong, but it's not, it should not ever be up to a person or a group of people to be like, eh, well, like half your roster's being up. We don't think you're going to be any good. Let them prove that. I'm looking forward to next year. I think next year is going to be super fun, and especially also with the thought of having, you know, at home play-ins and stuff.
Sure.
I mean, can you imagine this place if like Utah or BYU gets an opportunity to host a playoff game? It's just going to be electric. It's going to be absolutely electric. So I'm looking forward to that. I hope someone in this state at some point gets that opportunity with this new system and layout, because I think it'll be incredible. But I am definitely looking forward to just seeing what everybody's bringing, rather than, you know, I think Kyle Whittingham's called it it's not a playoff, it's an invitational. And I think that's absolutely correct.
Well, and I think that points directly to what happened with Florida State this year, Michelle. I've got this conspiracy theory, and I know a lot of people have also shared it, that the reason why Florida State was ultimately left out is they're trying to destabilize the ACC, and you've seen Florida State respond in kind. They've got their lawyers looking at, okay, how can we break this grant of rights with the ACC? How do we get ourselves out of this? Because, in all honesty, I think these powers that be, the power brokers in college football, and they're mainly the TV networks, let's be real, want to create some of these super conferences, and getting a power a brand like Florida State in, let's say, into the SEC or into the Big Ten, whatever it might be, is their idea. And you're right, it is absolutely an invitational. It's not been a true playoff. And next year with 12 teams, it becomes more of that, where 12 teams have an opportunity to win it all rather than just four.
Exactly. And you know what? I will happily wear that tinfoil hat with you. I was going to say, after, you know, all the digging and the conversations and the poking and that I did with conference realignment with the Pac-12 and the Big 12 and the Big 10, like, I absolutely buy that happened and was a reason, and that ESPN probably had a little sum to do with that, persuading that decision. So... and for that reason, in order to stock up on who they want and leave the rest behind. So, yeah, I buy it. I'll happily wear that tinfoil hat.
All right. Well, we will take a timeout here. We'll come back on the other side. We'll get into some of the biggest stories for, like I said, for BYU, Utah Jazz from the year that was, because this is the funny enough, Michelle, we are doing the final live radio broadcast for the zone, for the KSL Sports Zone, until the new year begins. So we got the lucky chance to kind of look back, I guess, in a way, in memoriam of 2023, and we'll get to all that coming up next. This is the Saturday Show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jay Catch, Michelle Bodkin along for a ride on the Saturday morning. Hope you all are doing well out there. We have a New Year's Six bowl game underway. We've got number 10 Penn State taking on number 11 Ole Miss in the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl down in Atlanta, Georgia. Penn State leading Ole Miss 3-0 early on. Jackson Dart, the former Roy Royal and Corner Canyon Charger. He went into the injury tent for a short minute there, Michelle, but now he's back on the field, obviously. And this is actually a game that has, I think, more juice to it and actually has more athletes than what you're looking at with regards to what happened last night.
I mean, thank goodness. Some of these games have to be good. Some of these games have to feature the people that we want to see, right? Yeah, like, no, about no, time.
No doubt. Yeah, no doubt. All right, so, Michelle, we wanted to kind of look back at the year that was for each of these local teams. I want to start off with the Utah Jazz, if you don't mind. And in your opinion, and I know that you're pretty hyper-focused on Utah, obviously, with your role being the Utah Utes insider and everything, but in your mind, what is the biggest story for the Utah Jazz in your mind? Was it the All-Star game coming here? This crazy enough, I think it was February that was here. They had an All-Star in that All-Star game, and Lauri Markkanen unearthed a pretty nice gem in him. What in your mind is the biggest story for the Utah Jazz?
I'm like trying to think here.
There's a lot of them. I can tell you that much. I'll tell you one of mine while you consider yours. And
okay.
I'm going to point directly to the Lauri Markkanen situation. But it's not because he was an All-Star, because that was absolutely an incredible thing to see him realize his potential. Obviously, had a very nice season last year. And when he's been on the court so far this season for the Utah Jazz, he's been absolutely marvelous. But the bigger thing for me is, there's been so much talk about, okay, is Lowry a trade piece now for the Utah
right.
Jazz? Like that's where the conversation has turned, because we have seen the Utah Jazz, let's be honest, it's not been the greatest start to the season, and everybody's saying, okay, well, they're building for the future. Well, with the way Lauri Markkanen's playing, he gets you pretty nice haul of assets. We're talking players, picks, et cetera, if you were to move on from him. So that's kind of the interesting debate. You've unearthed, a gem in Lauri Markkanen, but is he long for Utah, or are they really going to build around him? That's the big question mark for me. One of the big stories of the Utah Jazz this year is his kind of evolution and how the storyline around him has morphed in a 365-day span.
That's actually a good one. That actually is a good one. You know, I think I actually might lean into the All-Star weekend, and so much of it is I think about what that potentially means for future things here. You know, we're in the process of trying to lobby to bring in an NHL team. We're in the process of lobbying to try and bring in an MLB team. You know, we're essentially going to be hosting the Winter Olympics here, you know, in the not too distant future. So it's, I think something like that just really kind of helps highlight and bring in high-level people that get to check this place out and yep. see what we're all about. And I think that's huge. I think that's huge for the progress of our city and our state in general. But I also think it's huge for our growth and our progress in sports and being a sport town. I think overall it went without a hitch. I mean, you had like a couple of people complain about how boring we are here. Whatever. You don't know. One
True.
Weekend does not tell you everything you need to know. And sorry, we're not LA. But not really sorry. But I think for the most part, everybody had a good time and that we showed well. And I think that bodes well for some of the other stuff we're kind of eyeing and wanting to bring in here.
Well, and that's the thing about it. I'm with you on that. Is we've been starved. I know it sounds weird to say. We've been starved for pro sports in this market. We've had the Jazz forever, obviously, but to have it's potentially an NHL team, an MLB franchise coming to town, that would just be awesome. Because as you mentioned, it brings more people to the state, and we all kind of like think about, okay, we want to show off Utah, but at the same time, don't fill it up too much. Because
I was here first. I've been here for 34 years, and I don't plan on leaving, so please don't price me out.
Yeah, well, that's already kind of happened.
It has already happened.
We're all dealing with that. But nonetheless, yeah, it's kind of the interesting part is, yeah, how much can, like, the success of the Utah Jazz potentially, yeah, as you mentioned, kind of yield more pro sports? Because we have two different entities out there. We have the Smith Entertainment Group, led by Ryan Smith, the current owner of the Utah Jazz. He is apparently in very close talks, whatever you want to term it, with the National Hockey League to bring an NHL franchise here. And then the Millers, who are the former owners of the Utah Jazz, well, they have got everything pushing towards bringing an MLB franchise. And it seems like every move that they're making is very strategic and being very smart about bringing an MLB team here to Utah. And I, for one, yeah, I'm with you. It's just, it screams to me, let's make this happen. Get it done as soon as possible.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun, and it was also fun that, you know, they utilized and used facilities at the University yes. of Utah, and, mm-hmm. You know, again, that just, to me, that bodes so well to show that we have high-class facilities here, and that we have good restaurants, we have decent nightlife. But if you want to escape all of that, hey, go up to Park City. It's not that far. Maybe get a ski trip in. Like, we have a lot to offer here, and like I said, I just think that was ultimately, we're maybe still not seeing the dividends of that, but I think in the future that event was going to be just a huge catalyst for things that we want to do in the future.
Sure, and that's the thing about it. So, and the, I guess one of the other storylines, Jazz-wise, that I was kind of looking at is when it comes to what the Jazz are doing, there's so many people that are wondering, well, what's the timeline here? What's Ryan Smith thinking? What's Danny Ainge thinking? How soon are they really going to be back in contention? But they haven't really ever put like a timeline on it, Michelle, and that's the thing
right.
about it. Is I actually kind of appreciate it, because if you put a timeline on it, guess what happens? Expectations all of a sudden get heaped upon you, saying, okay, you said 3 years. We're putting you on the clock right now. I actually kind of respect in many ways that Ryan and Danny and Justin Zanuck, kind of the brain trust there for the Utah Jazz, they've actually been very reticent to say, okay, this is how soon it's going to happen. They want to make sure that all their ducks are in a row before they really make sure that they start putting any expectations on it.
And yeah, to your point, I think that's wise. I get that people want instant gratification, but to be honest, something like this, it's pretty hard to do something that's going to instantly gratify, you know, the
sure.
fan base, especially if you want to do it right, and especially if you want to do anything that might have some longevity that will last, you know, beyond a season or two. I think the real hope here is at some point building a dynasty. And we've had a couple of dynasties with the Utah Jazz in the past. They hadn't quite reached the promised land. They got close, but not quite. And so, you know, I think the hope and the vision here is to, like I said, build that next dynasty. You know, that group of players that everybody's like, oh, like, do you remember Stockton? Do you remember Karl Malone? Do you remember Jeff Hornacek? Greg Oster, Greg Ostertag, you know, those teams. And,
yeah.
And like the Mark Eden era and some of those kinds of things. I think they're in the process of trying to build that, but that takes time. That doesn't happen overnight. This is strategically, as you mentioned, bringing in players, moving players out, testing things out, seeing what works, what doesn't work. And that could take a couple of seasons. So, yeah, very wise not to put a timeline on you, because you might guess wrong a couple of times and have to kind of start over. So I think it's going to be interesting to see exactly how long this does take. But I hope, you know, fans will just kind of be patient and let it ride out, because as we've seen with other sports teams here, you know, coming to mind, Utah's jump to the Pac-12, obviously that took some time, but the reward was really great, right? So I think we're looking at a similar thing here. It's maybe going to take some time, and it's going to be painful, and there are going to be seasons that everybody's going to want to forget. But the potential to have, you know, several seasons in a row that are just incredible and memorable and, you know, all-timers for fans of that entity is huge. But you gotta let it play out.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, let's keep it on the pro sports front. Let's talk about the Real Salt Lake situation this past year. Crazy season. I'm lucky enough to be involved with the radio broadcast here on the Zone for those, Michelle. But RSL, obviously Ryan Smith, a co-owner of Real Salt Lake now, and just one of those seasons that you look at and say, okay, they started off horribly. They go on this incredible run kind of the middle part of the season, hit another lull, seem to be trending upwards once again, and then get in the playoffs and come oh so close to advancing, but then they kind of crash out. And then a bunch of changes. GM let go. All of the assistant coaches under Pablo Mastroianni were let go. So it was kind of a season of change in many ways for Real Salt Lake, but at the same time, a lot of the things stayed the same. You have guys coming into this franchise. They're the highest-priced athletes that the franchise has ever signed. But then just yesterday, for example, Demir Krylock, who has been a mainstay for Real Salt Lake, earlier this week announced that he's leaving the club. And we find out yesterday he's staying in Major League Soccer. He just so happens he's going north of the border to join the Vancouver Whitecaps.
Yeah, this has been another case of, I feel like this team's going through an evolution, and they kind of have been for some time. They're trying to, I think, find their way after kind of the Jason Christ era, which ironically enough, that was a big story. He's coming back.
He's back. So yeah, that's the funny thing about it.
He's coming back. He's in, you know, a different role, but like he's going to be around the institution, and hopefully, you know, that helps and bodes well for, you know, whatever changes they're trying to make to get back to where they kind of once were. But I think it's been a process since he left and took off, for the New York team,
New York City FC, NYCFC. Yep.
Yep. Yep. And it's been a bit of a struggle, that it hasn't been a linear move of progress. And it feels like, you know, they're still in the process of figuring some of those things out, but I think bringing back an all-timer to the ranks and getting that insight, getting that energy probably is going to help.
Yeah, well, I would agree with you on that. It'll be kind of an interesting year this year, obviously, because the expectations for RSL with all the high-priced additions they had during the season were that they needed to be top four in the West. They ultimately sunk a little bit lower than that, and that cost a bunch of people their job. I'm just interested to see, okay, what they do reorganizing the front office here, obviously, because they're going to bring in a new GM, it looks like, or at least some form or fashion of that. They're going to have new assistant coaches. There's an expectation for Real Salt Lake in my mind, to be far more competitive this upcoming season, 2024 is what I'm talking about, than for, like, let's say, the Utah Jazz. But it's because they have shown, okay, that they are in a competitive sphere now, and they have added the athletes they need to be that competitive.
Yeah, and it's interesting, you know, how much coaching or, like, a GM, of the front office people can go into either making or breaking a team. I mean, really, as someone that's actually worked in more of that role in the past with the Stallions, like, it's absolutely critical that you have the right people, not just on the field, but kind of directing and making sure that, you know, things are running smoothly and that the correct decisions are being made. And if you don't have that, it doesn't matter how much talent you have on the field, it's still correct. Probably going to fail. And I think that's something that, you know, we saw kind of take place and happen. So it's going to be interesting to see who they choose to bring in, and how quickly they can kind of get everybody on board and clicking.
Yeah, it will be. There's no doubt about that. And then one other thing, Michelle, on the pro sports front, we're adding another pro franchise. I don't know how much you've paid attention to this. The Archers, Premier Lacrosse League, is going to be calling Salt Lake City home. They'll be playing out at Zions Bank Stadium there in Harriman. I know that you've paid a little closer attention to Utah Lacrosse and the like. The Archers and Utah Lacrosse apparently have connections. I was talking with a friend, and he said that the Archers actually, a while back, took a number of Utah's assistant coaches to be coaches for the Archers. So in a way, there's a connection between those two, and we'll see how PLL does here in Salt Lake City. They've had a pretty good response when they've brought the Premier Lacrosse League out here for some of their, they call them like I said, barnstorming tour in a way for the past couple of years. But to have it as a full-time franchise here, we'll see how that does, obviously, because you have the other likes of the Utah Warriors and rugby. We have the Utah Royals coming back mm-hmm. next year as well, which is another big story. Some of these, I call them niche sports.
Yeah.
And that's probably the wrong term, but it's what it is. Like, they don't necessarily have the broad-based appeal that some of these other teams would have, but the fact that there are more pro sports calling Salt Lake City home, I guess the greater Utah area home, is a positive for all of us.
Absolutely. And to your point, lacrosse is growing. It's growing in popularity, and especially, I mean, it's pretty popular back east. It's very, very popular back east. It's not so popular out west, but I think the University of Utah's program is really helping to kind of change that and draw some interest out west. I've also talked in lacrosse is becoming a very big thing in like California high schools. So, you know, it's starting to move west, and I think having a pro team here that kind of complements, you know, your college team in a way and just brings more attention to the sport, I think is huge. And I think it has the potential to do really, really well. It's an interesting sport. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around exactly how it works.
You and me both, let's be real. I watch it. It's fun to watch.
It
but
is
I don't
fun
understand
to watch.
Half of it half the time.
Yeah. To be perfectly honest and clear, like, I don't understand what's happening most of the time. But I understand goals. I understand scoring. The rest of it, a little fuzzy. But it is fun to watch. And, you know, I would say, if you're a fan looking for a sports fan that's looking for something to do in the spring, check out the Archers. Check out the Utah lacrosse team. Like, it's highly entertaining.
Yeah, no doubt. So that's the fun part is you got more and more options available to us. There's no doubt about that. All right, coming up next, we will come back on the other side. We'll get to technical fouls, talk about some of the crazy things that happened in sports this week. I've got one, Michelle, that's a technical foul, and it involves wildlife in Australia. That should tell you everything you need to know.
Oh, I'm scared.
We will get to that next. This is going to be wild. We'll talk about all that next. This is the Saturday Show on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
If you're coming from the street with dirty shoes on your feet, that's a technical foul. If you switch the radio to some modern music show, that's a technical foul. If you touch the thermostat,
you'll get hit with a bat.
Cause that's a technical foul.
You will feel my wrath.
That's a technical foul.
Personal foul, 69, offense. He was giving them the business.
A technical foul.
Welcome back to the Saturday Show here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Jake and Michelle along for the ride. All right, it's time now for technical fouls, talking about some of the things that have been happening in other sports, I guess just sports in general, that aren't necessarily as fun as typical. But Michelle, I'm going to have you go first because this one actually has a direct impact on a college football playoff game coming up on Monday.
Yeah, so the NCAA is investigating unauthorized access from a college football program to Catapult. Now, Catapult is a company that provides and handles video footage for college football programs that they look into to, like, study film and mm-hmm. practices, that sort of thing. So someone was trying to allegedly breach Catapult and get footage that was not their own. They were trying to look into competitors' footage. And it's just been this whole thing. Obviously, I think everybody's mind instantly goes to Michigan.
yes.
Michigan is saying that it's not them. I don't know that I believe that, but hey, you know, whatever.
Should we believe anything when it comes to Michigan saying it's not them? Let's be real. Come on.
No, you got caught red-handed. And to be honest, there probably are others that have done exactly what they got caught doing. But, like, mm-hmm. the thing is you got caught, and everybody knows it now. But so there's been this whole investigation launched into it. Catapult saying that they're not finding anything that unauthorized people have accessed their materials, but the NCAA is still apparently investigating it. But it is interesting because I do feel like this also lines up with Alabama came out and said that they're not allowing anyone to like watch film on their own in preparation for the Rose Bowl on Monday. Because they are, you know, playing Michigan and no one trusts Michigan. Yeah. So it's
they're only allowing players to watch video in groups. They're not allowing it on the individual iPads. Yeah.
So crazy. But so guys, the lesson here is just don't cheat. It never pays off. You'll eventually get caught and it won't be fun.
Yeah, no doubt. There's no doubt about that. All right, sticking on the football front, Christian, you got a good one here. I was going to go with it, but you're a Broncos fan, so tell us of the times in life and storyline of Russell Wilson and the Denver Broncos. Oof.
Man, so this has just become an absolute mess. So basically, the Denver Broncos are benching Russell Wilson for the final two games of the season. It's related to the injury clause in his contract, long story short. If Russell Wilson were to get injured and unable to pass a physical, he would have an additional like $37 million guaranteed onto his contract. So, of course, with his play being not that great, the Broncos are going to bench him to avoid having to pay him that guaranteed money. But then it came out that this was a decision that they wanted to make a long time ago, apparently. Russell Wilson was reportedly approached by the team following their victory against the Kansas City Chiefs with nine games left to go. So allegedly they approached him, asked him to change his contract, which he denied, rightfully so. I mean, go get your money, right? So he declined and going into the bye week, they said, okay, well, we're probably going to bench you then. And they didn't bench him until recently when they lost against the Patriots. But it's just as, like, morally, it's kind of messed up. But from the business side, I get it. So basically all of Broncos country is kind of divided on how we feel about this move.
Well, okay, here's the thing about this, and Michelle, I'll get your thought on this. Russell Wilson signed a 5-year, it's like $240-some-odd million contract extension, which, by the way, only begins next year. Why in the world would you sign him to such a ludicrous deal when you apparently in your heart of hearts were saying, yeah, we might be moving on from this guy?
And not only that, he signed this contract before he even played a snap for the Broncos.
Correct. Yes, so, that's the other thing about
it. So he signed this deal with 2 years left remaining on his deal from Seattle that he was previously on. Now,
which he's still playing on currently right now, yeah.
Right. And so now, of course, things have not gone how the Broncos have wanted. Sean Payton has come in. They tried to make it work for a season. They were on the verge of making the playoffs, but their offense sputtered against the Patriots. They lost that game. Now they're all but mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. So Sean Payton wants to go in a different direction. They're going to have to eat a lot of money if they cut Russell Wilson. And sitting him these final two games avoids having to potentially pay him even more than what they're already going to have to pay.
It's just crazy. You know, I know a lot of people connected to Russell Wilson, and I've heard a lot of interesting stories about the guy over the years. But what a wild, wild set of circumstances in Denver. I just, between him and Sean Payton butting heads, which I kind of get it because Sean Payton didn't necessarily choose him, want him, whatever. He just inherited him. But it just, and you would kind of think that relationship would work based off of what Sean Payton was able to do with Drew Brees with the Saints for years and years. But I don't know. Mm-hmm. Like, there's some strangeness going on. I've heard that Russ can be kind of an interesting guy to work with. In fact, one person referred to him as Carlton to me. That just a lot to unpack there. I'm glad that I'm not the one that has to deal with that.
Yeah, no doubt.
By the way, apparently if they do cut him this offseason, Christian, correct me if I'm wrong, it's an unprecedented $85 million in dead money on the salary cap over the next 2 years if they do it.
Yeah, and that is over the next 2 years, so it wouldn't be all at once. I think it's like 39 next year and then the rest of it the following year. But that is, yeah, unprecedented. It's crazy, and that shows you just how much they don't want him. And, you know, frankly, he's not playing up to a $250 million contract. So right now is the best time to get out of it. It just sucks that they have to eat all of that dead money.
This feels like? It feels like the Jimbo Fisher situation at Texas A&M. But it's a quarterback and it's pro sports. That's just wild.
Yeah. All right. Real quick, I told you guys I had one involving Australia wildlife because, you know, like everything in Australia likes to kill you, essentially.
Yeah.
So, Michelle, former U.S. Open champion, I think it's Dominic Thiem, if I'm not mistaken. He had a brush with one of Australia's most venomous snakes during a qualifying match at the Brisbane International on Saturday. Now, the Brisbane International is one of the tournaments leading up to the Australian Open, which I think is in a couple of weeks. But he was the former world number three. Dominic Thiem was down a set to James McCabe in a first-round qualifying match when fans courtside spotted it is a eastern brown snake, Michelle, and it is one of Australia's most deadly reptiles, and that's saying something considering, like I said, Australia's got like every deadly reptile and animal in the world. Apparently this thing is 50 centimeters long and it started slithering onto the court towards like the ball boys and ball girls and everything. They had to like call security to come get it off the court before the match could resume.
No, thank you. Hard pass. hard pass. Look, here's
first off,
I was going to say,
where are you? Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't really have a fear of snakes, but like if it's poisonous and deadly, keep that thing away from me.
Yeah, they're in Brisbane. Like, Brisbane's a pretty big city in Australia. Like, how in the world does this snake get even inside the complex in my mind that it's also like, hey, by the way, I'm going to go right onto that court here. Let's go.
Do you want another tinfoil hat conspiracy theory? Someone planted it.
Got it. What is it? What have we got?
I don't know why. I would have to like look into the situation further to understand maybe possibly why. But for an animal like that to make its way into a pretty, I guess, industrialized place, it was planted. We're going to go with that.
Maybe so. Apparently, the eastern brown snake's venom, it might be the most potent of any snake in the world. So, hey, there you go.
Mm-mm.
So, good times.
No.
We will come back on the other side. We've been talking kind of about the year in review for the local sports teams and programs. We talked about the pro sports a little bit earlier on. If you missed it, you can check out the podcast and get that where we talked Utah Jazz, Rail, Salt Lake, et cetera. Coming up next, we'll kind of focus on the college. We'll talk Utah, BYU, Utah State, et cetera. We'll get to all that next. This is the Saturday show right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.